Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Third hour of the Clay Travis Buck Sexton Show is here, my friends. We are so pleased, so honored to have you with us, as always. We actually had a lot of news today, not just analysis, conversation, bringing you up to date on some stories we've been following for a long time. But the big breaking news was the retirement this year of Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, which means there will be a Democrat-appointed, Biden-appointed Supreme Court nominee to take that position. And we've got a big year for Supreme Court cases in general. That won't be affected by this per se, but in this year on the Supreme Court, you're going to have some major monumental decisions that could be coming down. So we'll be watching that one closely, and Clay and I'll be giving you a lot of analysis on that. As of now, we still do not have any Russian invasion of Ukraine to speak of. Over 130,000 Russian troops spread around the eastern border of Ukraine in what seems to be a preparation for invasion. Some people are even talking about a Russian blitzkrieg that could topple the government in Ukraine and try to overrun all their forces in rapid fashion. The Pentagon is right now actually on Fox. You've got Pentagon spokesman Kirby talking about sanctions and all the rest of it. If anything comes of that, we'll let you know. You've got the White House briefing up in just a few moments, too. If Jen Psaki says anything, well, I was going to say worthwhile. It's not says anything that we have to either refute or make fun of, or usually both. We'll certainly bring that to you as soon as it happens. But I saw this and I was hoping we maybe move a little bit into discussion of where the Biden regime is right now with the economy and a few other topics. But I got to tell you.
Let me, by the way, before you get to that, I got to give you props. You drove like the entire news cycle yesterday with your analyzing the border in Ukraine versus the complete lack of focus on our border, on the southern border. I can't tell you the number of places I have seen since our show yesterday, for people who were listening, Buck made a really what I think is astute observation that the Biden administration is far more concerned about the border sanctity of Ukraine than they are the border sanctity of our own country. And in fact, has given far more attention to what might happen on the border with Ukraine than they have with what might happen in the United States at our southern border. And so you laid all that out yesterday. And then what happens, basically the entire apparatus of media discussion follows that throughout the rest of the day. So
thank
I would
you
give
very
you
much,
props.
Sir.
I hope people recognized it. Fox News .com picked it up and wrote an entire article about it out of our show. And by the way, I think that's a good sign for the show that we are having influence beyond the audience that we have right here. We love everybody out there listening. But the way that you change things is not just talking to your island of listeners, even though it is a big island. It's to influence the overall scope of discourse. And I think as it pertains to Ukraine and the border, you did that on behalf of the show yesterday. It was well done.
Thank you so much, sir. I'd say I feel like our mission here continues to be, I've said before, we're the unsinkable aircraft carrier of free speech. But I really also mean that aircraft carrier analogy goes to, I want other conservatives to know that they can stop on our deck, refuel, go take their mission, go do what they got to do. You know, I want us to be a gathering place, a resupply, a strategic forward operating base, if you will, for all of our fellow conservatives making the case. It's why we try to borrow a term from the left, to platform people.
Yes.
I prefer my aircraft analogy, but to platform people. And we're going to continue to do that here because we're about the movement and the team, folks. We're about winning. We're not trying to play any of that petty nonsense within our own team on the right. And Clay, you know, I just saw this in the commercial break we're in a moment ago. And I just want to bring folks up to speed because the White House just put this out apparently. And I mean, you got kids. So you're actually somebody who has to deal with this decision. I know a lot of our listeners have children that are dealing with this decision. This is from the New York Post just now. The White House said Wednesday the COVID-19 vaccine regime for kids younger than 4 years old will likely be 3 doses when it is approved. 2 clinical trials of the Pfizer vaccine on children aged 6 months to 2 years old and ages 2 to 4 are underway. But the older group hasn't yet met standards, according to White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci at a press conference. Dose and regimen for children 6 months to 24 months worked well, but it turned out the other group from 24 months to 4 years did not yet reach the level of non-inferiority, so the studies are continued. Clay, three shots for your three-year-old?
Well, and don't mistake what he's saying there. The shots didn't work. And so now they are saying you need to get more shots. Let me just, I have a 13-year-old actually turning 14 tomorrow. Happy early birthday to my oldest son. Went out to dinner with the family last night to help celebrate. I've got a 11-year-old and I've got a 7-year-old. So I've got an 8th grader, a 5th grader, and a 1st grader. There's no way on earth that I am getting them the COVID vaccine. And I don't even think it's fair to call it a COVID vaccine anymore. It's a COVID shot. If you are, in my opinion, great thing about being a parent is, at least so far, you get to make choices for your kids based on all of the data, all the analysis, everything that you have learned as an adult. And by the way, every parent out there knows you make a lot of bad decisions too, right? Parenting is about trying to limit the bad decisions and maximize the good decisions to allow your kids to have the best possible outcomes. You know, no parent gets everything right. And no parent gets everything right with every kid. But if you are getting your child who is under the age of 4 a COVID shot, I think you are bonkers. I think you are banshee level crazy based on all the data that I have seen. Now, unlike all these mask idiots out there, I'm not telling you, hey, you have to wear a mask. I see a lot of young kids wearing masks. I think it's awful, but that's their parents' right to make that choice. I'm not saying you can't do it. And I'm not anti-vax because somebody's going to grab this audio and they're going to be like, Clay Travis is anti-vax. He's an awful parent. He's trying to kill kids. No. I look at the data and decide in a rational, not fearful, not emotional, the decisions that I can make for my family. And there is no way on earth, based on the data that's out there, that my young kids are in danger from COVID or in need of a COVID shot. Not anti-vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella, all that stuff when they're young. I got my kids the vaccines, okay? But I am anti the COVID vaccine for young children, and I can't make it any clearer to anyone than saying that's the choice I'm making for my family. You have the right as a parent out there to make your own choice, but Buck, remember in the press conference when some loser reporter, idiot reporter out there asked Biden, hey, when are we going to be able to get COVID shots for kids that are under 5 years old? And I was thinking to myself, who are the parents out there that are clamoring for their under 5-year-old kids to get the COVID shot when they have zero risk whatsoever? And by the way, when frankly, I don't think these COVID shots are giving them very much protection. As Fauci himself just said, they can't even figure out how to get the right immune response. The right immune response is get the virus and get over it. That's the perfect immune response. That's how kids handle most viruses.
There's also a huge tell here, and I know we've discussed it, but we have to keep bringing these things into the conversation because they intentionally exclude these things from the conversation. Natural immunity. Think about the context that we're entering now when they're talking about getting kids shots. The chance that most of these children that we're talking about now have been exposed to and already beaten COVID and likely have lasting and perhaps even lifelong immunity against whatever the COVID strain is that we're now trying to deal with is very high. They make zero allowance for this whatsoever. They have no interest in addressing this whatsoever. And you can just tell all along there's been this completely unscientific approach to pretending natural immunity. Now the studies come out that let you know, 6 months ago when the big Delta surge was happening, it was better if you had natural immunity from a previous COVID infection than the vaccine. Fact. That's now come out. What do we think we're going to find out in 6 months? That was some one-off in the world of nature? No. But Clay, they don't care. Even though we used to be told that 40% of COVID cases were asymptomatic. So if that was the CDC's figure in the summer of 2020, I've never forgotten. That's part of how they justified masks, by the way. It always changes based on whatever restriction they need, right? So they said 40% are asymptomatic. If 40% of cases are asymptomatic in the general population, what percentage of cases are asymptomatic among children who we know all along have been much faster at clearing this? They make no effort to get us that data or those numbers whatsoever. It's disgraceful.
We really should have, since they're using kids like pincushions out there to test them on the COVID vaccine. Buck, why don't we have testing to know what percentage of kids have COVID antibodies? Wouldn't you like to? I would love to know that. I would. My kids, two of my youngest are in public school. I would love to know what percentage of kids. I think that would be instructive and knowledgeable data that parents would like to have. What percentage of kids in any given city or in any given school district already have at this point antibodies to COVID? That seems like it would be a wildly useful statistic. And you can test inside of a school. Like, I would be comfortable if they sit in and said, hey, we're thinking about testing at your kid's public school, your elementary school. Would you allow us to take a blood sample and check and see if your kids have had COVID? I would love to know that information. And then also be able to extrapolate it to the larger community and the larger school system, because that would be important information for all these teachers out there that are continuing to say, oh my God, we're in such danger. We can't go back and teach. Well, if you knew that 75% of kids have already been exposed to COVID, which I don't think would be a crazy number at all, wouldn't that influence in many ways the public policy discussion surrounding masks and also surrounding kids being able to attend school? Because it would limit what risk factors are actually in play for so many people out there. And obviously, a lot of kids 12 and up have gotten the vaccine. That's the choice you can make. But I just think this is madness. Young kids, newborns, six-month-olds. I mean, what are you talking about? It's insanity.
Imagine a close family relative sending you an email today with a link attached. The note on the email says, click on this when you want to smile. And when you do, you're immediately, your home family movies, rather, show up from long ago with the smiling faces and voices of so many relatives and friends. You're just awash in those memories. That's the magic of Legacy Box, one of our very special sponsors here on the Clay and Buck Show. Legacy Box is a simple mail-in service that takes all your videotapes, camcorder tapes, family film reels, and converts them to perfectly preserved digital files. They've done this now for nearly 1.5 million families. Legacy Box is based in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where some 200 technicians use state-of-the-art technology to hand-transfer each of your family videos and film into digital files that are easy to see, watch, and share. Those memories are now preserved forever. I mean, isn't that awesome? They make it so simple, too. I did this whole process. They sent me the box. I put some old photos from high school athletics and with my family when I was a kid, and we all had our classical music instruments out in a photo, all this kind of stuff, and I shipped it to Legacy Box, and then in a few weeks, I got back a thumb drive so I could just upload it. Now I can send those old photos to members of my family, and we've got them forever. They can put it on a thumb drive. They can put it up in the cloud. They make it so convenient for you. Go to legacybox.com/buck to get a special discount. Again, that's legacybox.com/buck. That's how you get started. Just go to this website now, legacybox.com/buck.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Buck, I don't know if you saw this yet, but all of a sudden, left-wingers have discovered this UPenn swimmer story. Have you noticed this?
I have not seen this. No, tell me more.
The New York Times yesterday had an article about it, about the controversy, and they said, oh, right-wing media outlets are fed up about, as if being in favor of women competing against women is a super right-wing idea. And they're trying to turn it into a political issue. No, look, if you're a man and you decide to compete against women, we're not making that issue. Like, you chose to do that. And I don't even see this as remotely. I mean, I know that people sometimes fight against this idea, but I really do see this as not a particularly political issue. Because there's nobody out there arguing, for instance, if you just take outside male and female sex, if somebody was like, hey, I think this 240-pound boxer should get to compete as a flyweight, you would say, no. Flyweight boxers are 120 pounds or less. It would be fundamentally unfair for a 240-pound heavyweight boxer. Obviously, he would be the best boxer at 120 pounds. And I coach 10 and 11 year old basketball and have coached Little League and all different sorts of stuff. If suddenly I trotted out a 16 year old on my team as a mustache, fully grown, that kid would be the best kid on the court. but everybody in the stands and everybody on the opposing team, that's why we have birth certificates, would say, no, 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 you don't get to bring in a 16-year-old to compete in 10-year-old athletics. And so this idea that you can just parachute in a man and that he's going to be able to compete against women because he now identifies as a woman, as this being a right-wing issue, what percent? I mean this honestly, Buck, because I read the New York Times piece and they're trying to turn it into a real strong political wedge issue. What percentage of people in America think that a biological man in sports should be able to compete against biological women? Like, straight up, if we were polling this, 2 or 3%?
So I'd have to say this. I think you would get 20% of Americans right now to say to a pollster that they're okay with biological males, also just males, competing against females. But I think that the number of people who would be okay if they were competing, or rather they had a family member, a child, college age, competing with that situation, is less than 1%. I think essentially no one who is touched by the issue would ever say that, because it's so obviously unfair, right? It's such a common sense based issue. But you know, it's interesting, Clay. There's actually there's some interesting studies out, and you can see. I'll just tell you, I'm reading this book. It's just called Testosterone, because I wanted to know more about the gender debate. And one of the things that keeps coming up, you know, about trans issues and all the rest of it, is that they try to, within science, there's an effort right now within the scientific community, scientific consensus, just like the Fauciites with the COVID stuff, to say that testosterone doesn't really affect things as much as we think it does. And it certainly doesn't affect behavior, desire. All the science is against that, but it is fashionable. All the actual data shows testosterone is enormously important, not just to your physicality, male versus female. And of course, testosterone exists in women too, but it's the level of testosterone, not only your physicality, but also your behavior, your deportment, your desires, all that is affected by it. But they try to suppress this because it goes to what we're saying. This is about biochemistry. This is actually about science.
So I also think it ties in, Buck, with the way that we decide what's acceptable and unacceptable when it comes to fair competition. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are two of the greatest baseball players of all time. They didn't get into the Hall of Fame because they used performance-enhancing drugs. So when you change your gender, that's a pretty significant drug that you're allowed to use, that also gender is performance-enhancing. And I don't understand how you're not spending more time as a larger sports society talking about the analogy there. To me, it seems like there's a big connection.
It's cruel and deeply anti-feminist, by the way, to allow this to happen. Let's point that out, too. All right, I love my MyPillows. Clay's got Giza Dream Sheets. I've got Giza Dream Sheets. I'm hooked up with all these MyPillow products, the My Slippers. They're amazing. This is what I'm living my day-to-day in, because once you go with the MyPillow products, you're going to say, this is what I need on my bed, on my couch. Put them on your feet. They've got clothing. They've got blankets. Amazing stuff. For a limited time, you've got to try the My Slippers. All wintertime, I'm so happy to have them. The My Slippers are 50% off. That's right, 50% off when you use promo code Clay and Buck. Make sure to also check out their overstock sale that includes deep discounts on select pillows, towels, sheets, and more for a limited time. Enter promo code Clay and Buck when you go to MyPillow.com. Just click on those radio listener specials, enter promo code Clay and Buck, or call 800-792-3269, 800-792-3269.
Why should Americans care about what's happening in Ukraine?
Because it goes to a very fundamental principle of all nations, which is that our borders should be inviolate, that our sovereignty should be respected.
Sovereignty should be respected. That was the Deputy National Security Advisor to the Biden regime yesterday. Welcome back to Clay and Buck Show. I just want to point out, sovereignty is really important when it is 5 or 6,000 miles away in a country that is not America. And is not even close to America. That's very important. And if we have to send troops, you know, the Biden regime wants you to know we got to send a whole lot of missiles. I'm seeing the photos of more Javelin anti-tank missiles. Remember, Obama administration actually refused to send Ukraine Javelin anti-tank missiles, too provocative. Trump came in because he's such a Russian stooge, and sent Javelin anti-tank missiles, Dragunov sniper rifles, and other lethal munitions to Ukraine. And now we're sending a whole lot more, it seems, in the Biden regime's preparation for the possibility of invasion here. But it is fascinating, isn't it? Sovereignty is important for Ukraine. And Clay, we have an obligation. And again, I'm speaking from the Biden regime point of view here, an obligation to take risks and perhaps even blood and treasure spent to protect Ukraine's sovereignty. God forbid, but that could end up happening here. But our sovereignty, a couple of 100,000 people coming in illegally every month, a massive wave of illegal migration that the Biden administration is essentially waving into the country, every state turning into a border state because they're putting them on planes. They're flying them from, you know, they're flying them from McAllen and from El Paso and from wherever to New Jersey and New York and California and Illinois. And you sit there, you say, wait, so everyone else's sovereignty is important, but our sovereignty is racist, I guess. That's what we're told. Racist.
Not only that, the media will actually cover the Ukrainian border issues and not cover the United States border issues. I keep coming back to the Biden presser because it's such a clear window into what media focus is on. Think about how many questions we got surrounding Ukraine and how many questions we got about the border. We didn't get a single question about the murder rate, which has skyrocketed in this country. I saw a data point out, largest U.S. cities, Buck, up 44% the murder rate is since 2019. So in 2020, we were up 30%. We were up again in 2021, such that we are up 44% since then. We didn't get a single question about murder. We didn't get a single question about the border. And what that says to me, compared to all of the obsession that is there with Ukraine, is very often the media's focus is far outside of the scope of what your average person is thinking about. So I'm glad to live in a place like Nashville, because I think sometimes you get seduced by whatever your environment is. If you're in New York or LA, where there's lots of media, you know what people talk about here? Inflation being up massively, masks on their kids in school. They talk about whether or not they feel safe being able to go out into cities. All of those things are what is going to decide the election in 2022. Whatever happens in Ukraine is unlikely to be a major story, but for the fact that, much like Afghanistan, Buck, it can reinforce the overall perception, which is accurate, of incompetence. Remember, usually foreign affairs don't dictate local domestic politics. But when those foreign affairs, like what happened with Afghanistan, reinforces a level of incompetence that resonates with all of the issues that are going on today with inflation and the murder rate and the border failures and everything else, COVID failures that are going on, that's when it has a significance. And I think that's what's happening right now.
I think we've learned a lesson over the last 20 years, not just about why we don't want to be building other societies thousands of miles away for other cultures and other groups of people that are not America. I think we've learned that lesson in ways that I can barely begin to express here on this show right now, but everyone knows what I'm talking about, Iraq, Afghanistan. But beyond that, you know, one of the aspects of Trump's populism that really caught on initially was this revolutionary idea at the time of focusing that the government of the American people should focus on the interest and protection of Americans first. That was all of a sudden, it was like, wait a second, what do you mean? Don't we have to ask the UN for permission before we think about Americans? I mean, don't we have to go to the IMF and wonder what our domestic policies are? Maybe we could have some UN observers for our elections to tell us how to really do it. The rejection of that ideology was one of the key factors in Donald Trump's rising to what they thought was the impossible win in 2016, right? And still the Trump movement continues on, and we may very well have another Trump presidency going forward, as we know. But that's something that I think you've seen the so-called intelligentsia, a word taken from the Russian, by the way. And if people learn about the original Russian intelligentsia, they'd have a very different feeling about what they actually are all about. But anyway, conversation for another day. You can see, Clay, I've had some late nights reading about pre-Soviet Russia. It's very, very instructive about our current times with authoritarianism and the Democrats.
You're one of the only people in America reading about pre-Soviet Russia in any part of your day, other than like Russian history professor somewhere. I do think, to the point on Ukraine, when we went into Afghanistan, there was at least the argument directly connected to 9/11. We're going in to advance American interests because these people attacked us. If we could go back in time, the right time to leave Afghanistan, in my opinion, and declare victory, which would have been a much stronger American foreign policy perspective, was right after we killed Osama bin Laden. If Barack Obama, I bet, had it to do all over again, that's a clear line of demarcation. We went into Afghanistan. We have caught all the people responsible for attacking our country. Now we're going to leave. It would have avoided the disaster that Biden got there. But with Ukraine right now, the American public, the narrative of why we should care, there's no connection there. And so the idea of going in with American interest associated with Ukraine, I think, doesn't pass the smell test for most Americans, who are even more skeptical after the failure in Afghanistan, after we went into Iraq on the presumption of weapons of mass destruction. This was another thing that Trump was willing to talk about, which was almost verboten in Republican politics. It was, hey, I don't think the decision to go into Iraq was the right one. Remember? I mean, that was a revolutionary thing for him to say that I think a lot of people responded to, that connected this idea of American exceptionalism. Let's focus on America. We don't need to be the world's police.
We have a Republican, a conservative base in this country, roughly age, let's call it, 20 to 45. Well, 20 would be until recently we were still in Afghanistan, but let's say roughly 20 to 45. We have a conservative base of people who, and maybe my math is off, you could say into their 50s, but I'm talking about over the last 20 years, we've had people that have experienced the realities of an overactive and overreaching foreign policy from the smartest minds in D.C., by the way, on a bipartisan basis, Republican and Democrat. But the people that are listening to this now who served, the millions of Americans who served in those countries, I think saw a reality up close and personal in the clearest possible ways of what it means when you take the conversations about sovereignty and universal human rights from a think tank near Capitol Hill or in Foggy Bottom and turn it into, we're going to send a bunch of other people to fight a war in a far off country. And we're not exactly entirely sure what not only the mission is going to be in the end, but why we're there in the first place. I mean, certainly in the case of Iraq, that's been the conversation, and with the extension of the Afghanistan mission, too. So I think this is why I'm pretty confident that the American people don't want anything in Ukraine, Clay, don't want us to be in Ukraine in any way that would get us involved in that conflict. But it goes back to your initial point about what does this show us about the Biden regime? I mean, they're floundering.
Yes.
They're having real problems. And one way to get the country mobilized behind you, if you can pull it off, if you look back at the realities of our past, have a war somewhere. And that's what really concerns me.
We know you love freedom and want to defend it. It's one of the reasons we're together every day on this show. And we know you love the Constitution, too. That has defined our freedoms and helped distinguish our nation as the beacon of hope for so many people worldwide. No other college teaches and shares their respect for the Constitution like Hillsdale College, the best liberal arts college in America. Hillsdale's mission is to pursue truth and defend liberty. It gives its undergraduate and graduate students the best education, and it's working to make this education available to all. They offer free online courses and spend a great deal of time and resources supporting great K-12 schools. And each month, Hillsdale publishes a free monthly speech digest. It's all about liberty. It's called Imprimis. Over 6 million households and businesses receive Imprimis for free each month. You can subscribe for free, too, by signing up for free online. Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com is the website to do all that. Buck, how do people get hooked up there?
Just go to Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com. That's Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com. You get Imprimis sent to you for free. It's a concise, smart, useful, and fun publication. Start receiving your own free copy of this Digest of Liberty. Just go to this website right now, Clay and Buck for Hillsdale. A couple of words there, Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Encourage you to go subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything there. Also, clayandbuck.com, since some of our content is being restricted on certain social media platforms, you can always go find everything at clayandbuck.com as well. News for those of you maybe got in your cars late. Justice Stephen Breyer on the Supreme Court has announced that news broke right as we started the show today that he is going to be stepping down. And so sometime in the summer, there will be a Senate judiciary battle, one would presume, over who that next nominee is going to be. Evidently, Breyer is scheduled to officially announce that decision tomorrow to step down. Buck, there's all sorts of craziness going on out there in the world on a day-to-day basis. By the way, thanks to Carrie Lucas, mom in Virginia, five kids, the mask mandate. We had a great discussion about that with her. She was our only guest today in the first hour. But I saw this story, and you've got the details on it. We were just talking about it during the break. You know, things are wild everywhere, but a woman got attacked by monkeys? Like, what exactly is this story? It's like Planet of the Apes style.
This is crazy. Just a few days ago, it was on Friday, a woman happened upon the scene of a trailer crash, a pickup towing a trailer with 100 monkeys. And she tried to assist, and one of the monkeys, as they are known to do for those who have spent time around monkeys, spit at her and hit her. And now she has developed what is described as pink eye symptoms. But a woman happened upon a crash of lab. I guess they're, I don't know what they're doing with these monkeys. I gotta find that out. They're being transported to a zoo. That makes sense. At the time, Fallon said she learned the crates contained monkeys. She assumed they're being transported to a zoo because the driver never mentioned anything about the monkeys being imported and transported to a lab. Oh no, that's the USA Today story. So they are lab
testing
transport monkeys. This is, I believe, very close to the beginning of the movie 28 Days Later, which is terrifying, and also the movie Outbreak, which I think involves a monkey biting a person.
So we used to do, for people out there who are Outkick listeners back in the day on our Sports Talk radio show, we would do Animal Thunderdome stories. And we were down in Fort Myers, and I got a question from a guy in the crowd who's like, can you bring back an Animal Thunderdome segment? And the Animal Thunderdome was basically people getting attacked by animals. This is a pretty tough spot to be in. You don't want to hear that you have developed a some sort of medical response to your interaction with laboratory monkeys. What? I mean, of the sentences that if you think you're having a rough day, unless you have been attacked by laboratory monkeys and developed some sort of reaction to that, your day's not that bad.
Imagine you call your physician, you know, you're like, hey, doc, I got to come in and see. He's like, what happens? Like, well, there was a lab escape of a bunch of monkeys. I don't know what they were doing the test with, but one of them spat at me and now I can't really see out of one of my eyes. Like, I think the doc might show up with one of those big hazmat suits. You know, that, by the way, will stop the virus. Just to be clear, that actually
I'd be
works.
In favor of a hazmat suit there. I might be in the hazmat suit if I was that doctor.
What is the scariest mono-a-mono animal for Clay? The mono-a-mono animal encounter, since you're talking Animal Thunderdome, for Clay Travis. I used to play this game with my siblings and my parents all the time. We play the which animal would win game, but scariest animal, mono-a-mono, Clay.
I think water animals are scarier because you can't necessarily know where they are. So I think a saltwater crocodile, like a big crocodile somewhere in Australia, like you're just, you know, walking along the bank and next thing you know, a 15-foot crocodile comes out of the water after you is scarier than a lion or a tiger personally. Maybe a hippo. Like I always see these people, you see these stories like, hey, I was on an African safari and we decided to go down a river filled with hippos and like the hippos attacked. And I always think, like, could you not see the hippos from outside of the water? Like,
no,
that doesn't have a lot of appeal to me.
They're very quick and stealthy, and they're very territorial. It turns out hippos are quite dangerous. And there is, in an otherwise horrible movie based on a Michael Crichton novel, and I like Michael Crichton a lot, Congo, whole hippo attack scene. I think it's the only one I've ever seen on the silver screen. The hippos that go after them, but that will actually happen in real life. I think hippos, you guys could fact check me on this, but this is what happens. I think hippos are the most dangerous land animal in Africa, meaning they kill more people than lions. They kill more people than the other things.
Than crocodiles. Because a lot of people are scared of crocodiles, but the hippo are so territorial. And are you with me? I mean, I would love to go to Africa and go on a safari at some point. But I don't have any desire to be in like a canoe in an African river that's filled with hippos. It always feels to me like you're like canoes by themselves, by the way, are easy to tip. If there are crocodiles and hippos all in a river, why could you not just look into the river from out? See, I don't have a desire to be in the
water. I think the worst way to go would be if one of those 30-foot-long anacondas that they've, you know, occasionally
strangled you.
I think that's one of the, because you hate snakes. At least with like a lion or a bear,
and you know
probably
it's
get
happening.
You get got by the neck, and you know it's not going to last that long. The snake? I think the snake's the worst. Oh, another horrible movie, Anaconda, by
I've
the way.
I've seen that movie, too.
A lot of
CGI.
Wasn't
J-Lo in Anaconda?
So was actually conservative stalwart father of Angelina Jolie. I'm blanking.
John Voight?
Yep, that's right. He was in Anaconda.
That's a pretty strong cast to have John Voight and J-Lo in a movie about a deadly anaconda.
Yeah, but I just think snakes, man, snakes are bad, whether you're on a boat or even
very
on a plane.
Anti-snake.
Very
anti-snake. I used to say, this is a good question for you as a single man. If you walk into an apartment, you're in New York, or a house or whatever, and a woman who is single keeps snakes, right? Like she has cages of snakes. How many would she, like, what's the line?
We're talking about breaking out the crazy hot scale and some degree of granularity here.
How many snakes is too many, no matter how hot the girl is, where you would be like, I can't date?
For the single guys out there listening to this, if she's got a pet snake, think twice. If she's got a pet tarantula, run. Okay, I'll just tell you that. These are the rules.
Six snakes. I don't think I could date a girl that had snakes in her house. Like, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think that's a sound rule, Clay Travis, a sound rule indeed. See, safety tips here on the program. Don't pull over if you see 100 monkeys running out of a truck that's turned over. Let someone else handle it. And no dating ladies with tarantulas or a snake large enough to make you meet your maker. All right, that's going to be it for today. Some important news at the end there. Back with you tomorrow, diving into all that matters. Clay and Buck, over and out.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.